And welcome into the Monday edition of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Little Guys Movers. Here's your chance to be your own boss. Join their team of 30-plus years of profits and good times. Visit littleguysfranchise.com. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road and Michelle Knezvik here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Hope everybody's doing well out there. We got a lot to get into here today on the program. The Titans make a big trade over the weekend. They find a tight end as well. Today is NHL trade deadline day. Preds have already made one move. We'll see if other moves are coming today from David Poile and the Predators, including maybe the future of number 9 here in Nashville. A lot to get to today here on the program. As always, taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. We begin, however, on the Tennessee Vols out of the NCAA tournament. They fall to Michigan on Saturday. Joe Rexroad was there live and in person. And Joe Rexroad is here today, live and in person as well. Rexroad, what's going on? How are we doing?
Good. Just trying to get this this stuff figured out here. What's happened here to this? Oh, never mind. We can talk during the break about who did what to this freaking mic. Like, it was like
it actually was me.
It was like a pterodactyl.
What? Pterodactyl.
When we did the show on Saturday, I couldn't figure out that microphone. And it wouldn't get to the right height for my head, so I used the
so
two.
So you were standing and, like, talking into it over there?
No, I used that, but the two microphone, the one to your left.
Okay.
Right. So, yes, actually it was me.
All right. Okay, well, at least we have someone admitting to trashing the studio, because usually it's like an unnamed culprit, you know?
Several different culprits.
Yeah. So thank you, Michelle.
You're welcome.
Michelle, how are you doing today?
Doing good. Joe, I was telling Robbie last night I saw the new Batman movie. I'm not into that. This is the first ever Superman movie I've seen. Spider-Man, any of that. I'd give it like a solid 7 out of 10. But wow, it was 3+ hours long. And I told Robbie, I'm like, my attention span. I was like, I need to get out of here ASAP.
It was long. My God. Yes, it was long. It was too long. So many movies are too long now.
Yeah.
2.5 hours would have been perfect. Even you could have made it 2:20.
Start getting to 3, you're in deep territory. Yeah, like you got to be real good.
You better be the Godfather. You
exactly.
Know, if you're going to go that long. But, yeah. Pretty good, though, right?
Hey, I have to see it. So maybe I'll accomplish that this week at some point.
When are you still shaving? Are you still continuing to shave the beard?
No. Okay. It's just from last week.
All right. Okay.
I think this is the first time you've probably seen it, though, in person. Maybe.
No, one time.
Okay.
Right? Yeah.
No,
yeah,
I think just via Zoom.
No, I think it's been via Zoom.
We were all there in a meeting last week. We had one show together last week. And then we were in a meeting right in there.
Correct.
That's true. He did come in here the last part of that show. That's
Joe, right. We can't keep track of you. Robbie and I were like, so what state is Joe in? And then Robbie looks out the window. Oh, he's actually here. We're like, oh.
Well,
pleasant.
Speaking of that, I had a flight to San Antonio booked for tomorrow.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah. That's been canceled.
That has been canceled. I told you this before the show. It's unbelievable and yet so believable that Tennessee finds themselves in this position again. They just couldn't shoot in that game. I mean, they had wide open shot after wide open shot and could not hit them. And here they are going home in the round of 32 against Michigan. It's pretty amazing.
I think back on that game, and you do really have to credit Michigan. Michigan is good. Michigan's better than an 11. Michigan's talented. And they kind of remind me of North Carolina, a team that, well, like North Carolina, there's a team that Tennessee blasted early in the year. Would they do it now? No. They're a very talented team that has figured a lot of things out. Michigan's the same way. But you're up 60-54. And I really feel like one of those shots goes down and you probably are okay. And
yep.
You probably get through it. And none of those shots went down. And then Eli Brooks? What the heck? Why am I forgetting his name? The guy's been at Michigan forever. Yeah. Makes the running hook shot from like the side with Josiah James playing defense as well as you play. That puts him up 4. I mean, that was, that was the game to me, was that shot.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what you do about that if you're Tennessee, but it was just kind of a skyhook, throw it up in the air shot, and it goes in and they fall 76-68. So here we are. We're talking about this Tennessee team where lots of people have them in the Final Four. They played so well. They shot so well in the first game against Longwood. And you're thinking to yourself, okay, this is a real opportunity with the guard play that they've gotten, maybe to go on a deep run here. And we knew that the matchup would be different against Michigan, and Hunter Dickinson would be a lot to handle, and he was. He had 27 points in this game, 8 of 13 from the field, 8 of 10 from the free throw line, and 3 of 5 from the three-point line as well, which when he was making threes, and I saw you tweet this, like, what do you do if you're Tennessee about Hunter Dickinson when he's making threes? But 27 from him. Eli Brooks had 23 on the night. And then you go down to Tennessee and you start to look around. They shot 2 of 18 from 3. And when you shoot 2 of 18 from 3, you're going to put yourself in a really tough spot if you're this team. And we've talked about it. Shooting lulls happen. They've happened with this team throughout the year. Could they avoid that long enough to make a deep tournament run? And the answer was no. They could not, and the shooting lulls and the offensive stagnation got them once again, and ultimately that's why they're out of the tournament here today.
Yeah, I mean, you could look at that last stretch and say it's kind of like some of their stretches this year. It just obviously feels different because it's the end of the most important game of the year, and they had been playing so well. You know, Michigan took it to them early, and then they had the big run with Plavšić, a key player in that run, and then all of a sudden Kennedy Chandler just dominated the game. And you know, look, credit to Michigan. I think Michigan made some changes, you go into the zone defense and everything that got Chandler out of the lane. And honestly, I mean, look, you come away from this. I mean, I came away from that the other day, and I'm like, so what do I write about here? I mean, how do you write about anything but Rick Barnes, you know? So that's what I think a lot of the talk's going to be today, and that's fine. The bottom line is Rick Barnes, over time, the record speaks for itself.
Yeah.
I mean, you have a losing record in the NCAA tournament over this period of time with the teams you've had. That has to mean something. This game, I don't know what Rick Barnes did. Did Rick Barnes choke in this game? Did Rick Barnes make a coaching decision that was disastrous, or did he, like, make his players too tight? Did he say something late in the game where they missed all those shots? You know, I don't think there's anything that Rick Barnes did to lose this game. You know, sometimes you can see, oh, man, terrible play call or terrible substitution or whatever. But it just keeps happening. And I think at this point, I think what the problem at this point is that everybody knows that this is a big thing, and his players know it's a big thing, and they want to win for him, and that just increases the pressure on his players. I mean, I think it really is kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy right now for Rick Barnes of the Vols.
Well, and to your point, I mean, that's, I'm sitting at Bridgestone Arena Saturday night at the Preds game, and in the immediate aftermath, I'm just kind of scrolling through Twitter as the game ends, and you know, it was becoming pretty clear that Tennessee was going to lose, and that's all it was just Rick Barnes this, Rick Barnes that on Twitter. And I did look, you know, we've talked about it here on the show. We've criticized Rick Barnes and his record in March. I mean, it is what it is at this point until you find a way to change it. But I was sitting there watching that game take place, and I was like, yeah, I mean, I get it, and I understand why people are saying this, and I think there's validity to Rick Barnes in March. I just, for this game, I don't really know what he's supposed to do. They had shots. They didn't hit them.
Yeah.
And again, I get it. Like, that goes to, I mean, at some point, you've got to find a way to get it done come tournament time. So I understand you're a 3 seed taking on an 11 seed. I get Michigan talent-wise is not an 11 seed, but they hadn't put it together all year now. Don't let them start to do it at this time against you. I mean, but again, they had wide open shot after wide open shot, and they just couldn't hit anything.
Yeah, and I've heard, you know, a little back and forth with some Vols fans. I understand. Look, it's totally natural to say, okay, what about this or that with coaching decisions? Should Tennessee have gone big? You could say that, but when they were small, Michigan had such a problem with them. That's the thing. They got away with not having to go big against Diabate, the freshman, because Josiah James could deal with him, and it was better for Tennessee. I heard the, well, why do you keep taking outside shots? Okay, I get that, but the bottom line is Michigan was like, okay, we're not going to let you in the lane anymore. We're not let Chandler in the lane anymore. Now, Plavšić could have gone to the rim a couple times.
Yeah.
And he kicked out, but he kicked out to wide-open shooters.
He did.
You have to make these shots. You're not. You have to make these shots, these wide open shots. I mean, Ziegler had a couple great looks. Vescovy had a good look. James had a good look. Got to hit them. You hit one of those, and they didn't. So, like, yes. And I knew that exactly. The first thing that everyone's going to say is, "Look at his right." Hey, it's totally fair. The guy's been past the first weekend one time since 2008. I mean, that's bad.
Yeah,
that's atrocious relative to the teams he's had. You know, it really is. But in this particular game, tell me where he choked. You know, I mean, there was about a minute and a half where he had Fulkerson on Dickinson in the second half, and I was like, you have to change that. And that's one of the threes that Dickinson hit, and then they put Plavsic back in. Then they kind of were switching back and forth because Fulkerson was better for them offensively and Plavsic better defensively. But I see no huge coaching errors here. I do see, like, I just especially go back to the SEC tournament. There's so much focus, I think, for those players on winning this for Rick, and because they know exactly how the reaction is and what people say. I think that can be counterproductive. But what do you do about it? I don't know.
Would you like to take this opportunity? Michigan had 20 free throw attempts and Tennessee had 12. Would you like to take this opportunity to get after the officiating on behalf of Vol Nation?
No. There was a yesterday. It was Chris Beard. Was it Chris Beard? He called out a 42-12 disparity. Yeah. Purdue Texas. That's pretty big. But no. Thank you for bringing that up, though.
I
didn't hear much of that.
I didn't hear any of it, but I just wanted to give you a chance.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that.
We'll take your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. What do you make of Tennessee bounced early from the tournament? Again, we'll get your reaction coming up next. Let me tell you about my friends at FanDuel Sportsbook. You can start your bracket with a bang, and right now FanDuel Sportsbook is giving new customers $150 instant bonus guaranteed. That's right, you'll get $150 in bonus site credit, and all you have to do is place your first bet of $5 or more. How you bet the bracket is up to you. You can choose from the money line, totals, prop bets, and so much more. Gonzaga was my pick to win it all. They're still alive in the tournament, but you can take it any way you want to take it. Plus, with cash out, the ball's in your court, so you can close out your bet whenever you want before the game is over. Join FanDuel today with promo code ROB. Then you can place your $5 bet to score $150 in bonus site credit guaranteed. Once again, that promo code is ROB, exclusively on the FanDuel Sportsbook app. Must be 21 or older and present in Tennessee. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable site credit that expires 14 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See full terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Got a gambling problem? Call the Tennessee Red Line at 1-800-889-9789.
Under a minute to go. Michigan up by two. Shot clock at 7. Head and shoulder fake. Brooks tosses it up. Oh! Old school! Eli Brooks!
You are right about old school. Watch this. He knows he just has to get it up somehow.
Just show up to the YMCA and toss that up.
Yeah, Rick, I know every team and every season is different, but is it frustrating to win the tournament, be in a good position, and not be able to get past this first weekend again?
It's very frustrating but I will tell you this, and I'm really frustrated. I've been blessed to be here a bunch, and some teams got here that probably people didn't think would get here, some teams that we expected to get here, and it didn't turn out the way we wanted it to. But I can tell you from experience, whether you lose on the first day, the second day like we did today, or you lose in the semifinals, it's the same feeling.
That was Tennessee coach Rick Barnes after a loss for Tennessee, 76-68, the final on Saturday against Michigan. Juwan Howard and company get it done against the Vols. They advance to the Sweet 16. Is that their fourth consecutive Sweet 16, I think I read somewhere?
I think that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So four consecutive Sweet 16 appearances for Michigan. They win 76-68. Taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. So, Joe, this is going to lead to, yet again, a Rick Barnes discussion for the next few weeks here among Tennessee fans. And I saw it on Twitter on Saturday as well. Some have said, you know what, this is just what this guy is. This is all he can do. He's a really good regular season coach. But once the NCAA tournament comes around, he just can't get it done. And Tennessee should strive to be better than that. I saw a few of those tweets on Saturday, including from our program director, Chase McCabe. on Saturday night as well. There are some that say, have y'all seen what Tennessee basketball is mostly throughout the course of their history? Say for Bruce Pearl and Rick Barnes the last 35 years. It's not great. Not a whole lot there. I understand both sides of the argument. I think I would describe myself as more of the, have you seen what Tennessee basketball is without Rick Barnes than I do on the other side of this? But I understand those who maybe have a different viewpoint on that. Where do you come down on this discussion, and how loud do you think the noise is right now for Rick Barnes among Tennessee fans? Because honestly, in terms of them actually moving on from him, I don't really think there's any chance that happens.
No, I don't think there's any chance of that. And, I mean, I'm going to take him at his word the other day that he's, he's not thinking about retiring or anything like that. I will say on that front, Michael Schwartz has been a very important part of the success of Tennessee basketball. He's been there the whole time. Again, he goes back to being a walk-on for Rick Barnes at Texas, and now he's got the East Carolina job. Good for him. He deserves it. He's going to be really good. So that's a full turnover of Rick Barnes' coaching staff from what I thought was just a fantastic staff in 2018-19. You got head coaches at Georgia State, ETSU, and ECU now from that staff, which is a credit to all those guys. Also, I mean, that can be tough for a coach when you have to constantly keep turning over. But now, especially losing Schwartz, who's just been there so long with him, that's a big deal. But that's an aside. As far as the whole thing with Rick Barnes, the discussion, look, I probably go more on what you said, too. You got to keep in perspective what he's done at Tennessee. I feel like there was a lot more anger last year because that was a kind of a bad team. It was a good bad team,
Yeah.
It was a team that thought might be really special, and then it was like, no, actually it really isn't. And then they lose to this Oregon State team, which of course goes on a run to the Elite Eight, but still at the time it's like, how did you get smoked by that team? That's what you come with. So I feel like last year there was more like, this has got to change. Whereas this year, I think it's more, oh my God, they blew such an opportunity. Because look, they're far from the only one. There's a whole bunch of teams. Every year, there's a bunch of teams who are now sitting there at the end of the first weekend, sitting at home, that could have won it.
Kentucky.
Yeah, well, Kentucky's on. Who else? I mean,
Baylor.
Baylor. Baylor. Baylor could have won the thing. Auburn. I mean, Auburn was kind of a mess at the end there. But yeah, look at Auburn and the year they had. Every year this happens. The problem is when it consistently happens to you, everybody over time, like, you're going to have some just shocking losses where you were like, that team was special. I mean, Kenny Chandler could have been like one of the stories of this tournament. He's that good. And he's just starting to figure it out. And it's like, dude, this guy is lethal.
Yep.
And I mean, you saw his emotion after the game. I think he knew what they just squandered, So I feel like it's more like just the pain of this special team losing. I've heard a lot of people say, this is the best Tennessee team I've ever had in my lifetime. And that's saying a lot compared to 3 years ago. But I think you can make the case. I mean, it's right there. So I think maybe then it goes back into Rick Barnes. Yeah, but I think there's a lot more like, man, what a great team. He put together a great team. And we're back to the Rick Barnes discussion. Last year it was like, where's this going? Because remember last year, they had to go get bigs, that they didn't have any bigs. They went and got Huntley, Hatfield, and Adu. Ziegler, no one had any clue who that guy was. He's supposed to be a St. Peter's guard right now. He'd be deeper in the tournament, by the way, if he was a St. Peter's guard than a Tennessee guard. How about that?
That is true.
So you didn't even know what this team was going to be. Next year, they could be really good still. But is anybody excited about that right now? No, they're talking about Rick Barnes. And I get it. I don't know what the answer is, other than keep trying. Keep going at it. But something, there's some disconnect. And I would imagine, I've never been able to figure out like a good answer on, is there a common thread with Rick Barnes and all these teams that have underperformed? Does he yell too much at his players? Does he not yell enough at his players? I've never, basically, if you talk to people who have been around, it's like they just had a lot of bad luck. But that's just, I mean, over that period of time, you gotta figure it out. I mean, the guy, again, one time past the first weekend since 08, that's tough.
No, it's real tough, and especially when you see them play so well heading into that game, right? I mean, they played so well throughout the SEC tourney. You know, I realize it's Longwood in the first game, but they just shot so well. I mean, then you go back and you look at the way they shot on Saturday. I mean, we had talked about Josiah James and the way that he shot the ball. He's 0 for 6 from 3 on Saturday. You know, Vescovy made 1-3 on Saturday. Like, you can't win that way when Vescovy's making 1-3 for you, 2-7 from the field. Kennedy Chandler had 1-3. Like, they didn't have a guy, obviously, when they made 2 threes the whole game. They didn't have a guy make more than 1-3 in the game. When that's happening, it's just going to be tough to win. And I know Tennessee's defense has been good all year. I thought Michigan exposed them at times there and played really well on the offensive side of the ball. But, I mean, the fact of the matter is, we talked about this. Like, would Tennessee's shooting lull, would that come back to bite them at some point? And it did. Like, people are searching for, you know, an answer deeper than that, and I just don't really think it's there. Like, I think that's the answer. They had shooting lulls throughout the season. It bit them a few times. They had overcome that as of late, and they couldn't overcome it this time.
I agree. I guess.
But I know what you're talking about with the larger discussion of Rick Barnes, yes.
You know, like when Zeke was in the corner a couple times in a row, you know, this freshman who, again, had an offer from St. Peter's.
Yeah.
You know, is he thinking about Rick Barnes when he misses that shot? Probably not, you know. But they seemed to really get tight late.
Yep.
I mean, the Vescovy shooting, I think Michigan prioritized him, and teams, I mean, they were banging him all over the floor. So, I mean, that wasn't surprising to me. James had three, I think, that were like halfway down.
Yep.
And popped out. And he hit other shots. He played well. He still had a good game. Early in the game, he kept him in it because you're right. Michigan was shredding Tennessee early. They're very tough to guard. But down the stretch, I mean, if you look at the shots those teams had, I mean, even Dickinson, he had to hit like a fadeaway that was really tough. Like, they started to really do a good job of mucking it up around him, not letting him go in there and either score or set someone up for a layup. And basically, it was like Eli Brooks – off the ball screen, can you hit this mid-range jumper? And he did. And then he got hot, and he hits that hook. But, I mean, Tennessee's shots down the stretch with the lead and then down to the end were better than Michigan's shots. And as a coach, that's how you judge things. It's who got better shots. Yep. That's how you have to, because you can't put the ball in for your players. So I think you're right. It is as simple as they missed really good shots. I would not complain at all about any of the shots they got. I mean, you can always say, hey, well, go to the rim. Well, okay. But they're not helping off those people over there. They're in here, not letting us go there. But now they're leaving us wide open out here. You have to do that. You make the right basketball play. Didn't hit the shots. How much does that have to do with all of this stuff, the pressure? I just think there's extra pressure that these guys put on themselves because they love Rick Barnes so much. I mean, that hit me the other night, that game, and then going back to Tampa when the whole celebration was like, it was all about, like, Rick, we did this for you, Rick. And it's like, man, it's just a lot. I mean, he's not asking him to do that, but that's human nature when you know that the entire college basketball, I looked at Twitter too, it was like Stuart Mandel for the, you know, our college football guy, like, here's Rick Barnes' record in March. Like, everyone immediately tweets it. It's always comes up.
So do you feel any differently about the SEC now? Tennessee's out, Kentucky's out, Auburn's out, Alabama's out, Arkansas is the one team left that's standing. You feel any differently about the SEC now based on the way the tournament has gone through the first weekend?
I think that stuff gets super overrated because it's still individual team matchups. But it also, it's part of the deal. You know, if you're league performs the SEC tournament, then you were great. You were underrated. You were overrated. If you don't, it's pretty disappointing, man. It's pretty disappointing. You know, like I said, I thought Auburn was a mess. Kentucky, I watched St. Peter's win two games, and I'm still like, I
go
swear,
Peacocks.
I'm beating these dudes. I'm getting five people and beating these dudes at the Y. I swear. I don't know, but they're incredible. I don't know.
Yeah.
Doug, you can't not love that hair and mustache combo.
Oh, yeah. Fantastic. Yes. Fantastic mustache for Doug. But, yeah, it's pretty disappointing. Auburn, you know, and at least for the on the Tennessee fan front, by the way, don't have to hear this week about the Bruce Pearl stuff. You know, like
that
at least
true.
That can die and just – but they were. That's a huge disappointment. They're loaded. It's a big disappointment. Does it mean the SEC stunk this year? No, I think it was good. I mean, I saw Kentucky go into Kansas and destroy them on the road. You know, that game really happened. But the Big Ten and SEC both – very disappointing this tournament.
Yep, no question about it. We'll continue to take your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. A big move made over the weekend for the Tennessee Titans. We'll get into that coming up next. Let me tell you about my friends at the Nashville Predators. Season tickets for the Preds 2022-23 season are on sale now. Full half and quarter season plans are available. You can join the Loyal Legion today and receive the best seat locations, priority access to 2022 Stanley Cup playoff tickets as well. Another big win for the Predators over the weekend. They're looking pretty good to make the playoffs right now. And as a season ticket citizen, your tickets for round one of the 2022 Stanley Cup playoffs will be up to 20% lower than your regular season price. Tickets for round two of the Cup playoffs will be the same as your regular season price. So you're going to want to take advantage of that. Season ticket citizens receive season-long benefits, including concession discounts, Nashville locker room discounts, pre-sales to shows at Bridgestone Arena, and savings on Preds Foundation events as well. You can learn more at NashvillePredators.com/season tickets. Once again, that's NashvillePredators.com/season tickets.
Under a minute to go. Michigan up by two. Shot clock at seven. Head and shoulder fake. Brooks tosses it up. Oh! Old school! Eli Brooks!
You are right about old school. Watch this. He knows he just has to get it up somehow.
Just show up to the YMCA and toss that up.
Yeah, Rick, I know every team and every season is different, but is it frustrating to win the tournament, be in a good position, and not be able to get past this first weekend again?
It's very frustrating but I will tell you this, and I'm really frustrated. I've been blessed to be here a bunch, and some teams got here that probably people didn't think would get here, some teams that we expected to get here, and it didn't turn out the way we wanted it to. But I can tell you from experience, whether you lose on the first day, the second day like we did today, or you lose in the semifinals, it's the same feeling.
That was Tennessee coach Rick Barnes after a loss for Tennessee, 76-68, the final on Saturday against Michigan. Jawan Howard and company get it done against the Vols. They advance to the Sweet 16. Is that their fourth consecutive Sweet 16, I think I read somewhere?
I think that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So four consecutive Sweet 16 appearances for Michigan. They win 76-68. Taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. So, Joe, this is going to lead to, yet again, a Rick Barnes discussion for the next few weeks here among Tennessee fans. And I saw it on Twitter on Saturday as well. Some have said, you know what, this is just what this guy is. This is all he can do. He's a really good regular season coach. But once the NCAA tournament comes around, he just can't get it done. And Tennessee should strive to be better than that. I saw a few of those tweets on Saturday, including from our program director, Chase McCabe, on Saturday night as well. There are some that say, have y'all seen what Tennessee basketball is mostly throughout the course of their history? Say for Bruce Pearl and Rick Barnes the last 35 years? It's not great. Not a whole lot there. I understand both sides of the argument. I think I would describe myself as more of the have you seen what Tennessee basketball is without Rick Barnes than I do on the other side of this? But I understand those who maybe have a different viewpoint on that. Where do you come down on this discussion, and how loud do you think the noise is right now for Rick Barnes among Tennessee fans? Because honestly, in terms of them actually moving on from him, I don't really think there's any chance that happens.
No, I don't think there's any chance of that. And, I mean, I'm going to take him at his word the other day that he's – he's not thinking about retiring or anything like that. I will say on that front, Michael Schwartz has been a very important part of the success of Tennessee basketball. He's been there the whole time. Again, he goes back to being a walk-on for Rick Barnes at Texas, and now he's got the East Carolina job. Good for him. He deserves it. He's going to be really good. So that's a full turnover of Rick Barnes' coaching staff from what I thought was just a fantastic staff in 2018-19 You know, you got head coaches at Georgia State, ETSU, and ECU now from that staff, which is a credit to all those guys. Also, I mean, that can be tough for a coach when you have to constantly keep turning over. But now, especially losing Schwartz, who's just been there so long with him, that's a big deal. But that's an aside. As far as the whole thing with Rick Barnes, the discussion, look, I probably go more on what you said too. You got to keep in perspective what he's done at Tennessee. I feel like there was a lot more anger last year because that was a kind of a bad team. It was a good bad team, you know.
Yeah.
It was a team that thought might be really special, and then it was like, no, actually it really isn't. And then they lose to this Oregon State team, which of course goes on a run to the Elite Eight, but still at the time it's like, how did you get smoked by that team? You know, that's what you come with. So I feel like last year there was more like, this has got to change. Whereas this year, I think it's more, oh my God, they blew such an opportunity. Because look, they're far from the only one. There's a whole bunch of teams. Every year, there's a bunch of teams who are now sitting there at the end of the first weekend, sitting at home, that could have won it.
Kentucky.
Yeah, well, Kentucky's out. Who else? I mean,
Baylor.
Baylor. Baylor. Baylor could have won the thing. Auburn. I mean, Auburn was kind of a mess at the end there. But yeah, look at Auburn and the year they had. I mean, every year this happens. The problem is when it consistently happens to you, everybody over time, like, you're going to have some just shocking losses where you're like, that team was special. I mean, Kenny Chandler could have been like one of the stories of this tournament. He's that good. And he's just starting to figure it out. And it's like, dude, this guy is lethal.
Yep.
And I mean, you saw his emotion after the game. I think he knew what they just squandered, you know? So I feel like it's more like just the pain of this special team losing. I've heard a lot of people say, this is the best Tennessee team I've ever had in my lifetime. And that's saying a lot compared to 3 years ago. But I think you can make the case. I mean, it's right there. So I think maybe then it goes back into Rick Barnes. Yeah, but I think there's a lot more like, man, what a great team. He put together a great team. And we're back to the Rick Barnes discussion. Last year it was like, where's this going? Because remember last year they had to go get bigs. That they didn't have any bigs. They went and got Huntley, Hatfield, and Adu. Ziegler, no one had any clue who that guy was. He's supposed to be a St. Peter's guard right now. He'd be deeper in the tournament, by the way, if he was a St. Peter's guard than a Tennessee guard. How about that?
That is true.
So you didn't even know what this team was going to be. Next year, they could be really good still. But is anybody excited about that right now? No, they're talking about Rick Barnes. And I get it. I don't know what the answer is, other than keep trying, keep going at it. But there's some disconnect, and I would imagine I've never been able to figure out like a good answer on, is there a common thread with Rick Barnes and all these teams that have underperformed? Does he yell too much at his players? Does he not yell enough at his players? Basically, if you talk to people who have been around, it's like they just had a lot of bad luck. But that's just, over that period of time, you gotta figure it out. I mean, the guy, again, one time past the first weekend since 08. That's tough.
No, it's real tough. And especially when you see them play so well heading into that game, right? I mean, they played so well throughout the SEC tourney. You know, I realize it's Longwood in the first game, but they just shot so well. I mean, then you go back and you look at the way they shot on Saturday. I mean, we had talked about Josiah James and the way that he shot the ball. He's 0 for 6 from 3 on Saturday. You know, Vescovy made 1-3 on Saturday. Like, you can't win that way when Vescovy's making 1-3 for you, 2-7 from the field. Kennedy Chandler had 1-3. Like, they didn't have a guy, obviously, when they made 2 threes the whole game. They didn't have a guy make more than 1-3 in the game. When that's happening, it's just going to be tough to win. And I know Tennessee's defense has been good all year. I thought Michigan exposed them at times there and played really well on the offensive side of the ball. But, I mean, the fact of the matter is, we talked about this. Like, would Tennessee's shooting lull, would that come back to bite them at some point? And it did. Like, people are searching for, an answer deeper than that, and I just don't really think it's there. Like, I think that's the answer. they had shooting lulls throughout the season. It bit them a few times. They had overcome that as of late, and they couldn't overcome it this time.
I agree. I guess.
But I know what you're talking about with the larger discussion of Rick Barnes. Yes.
You know, like when Zeke was in the corner a couple times in a row, you know, this freshman who, again, had an offer from St. Peter's.
Yeah.
You know, is he thinking about Rick Barnes when he misses that shot? Probably not, you know. But they seemed to really get tight late.
Yep.
I mean, the Vescovy shooting, I think Michigan prioritized him, and teams, I mean, they were banging him all over the floor. So, I mean, that wasn't surprising to me. James had three, I think, that were like halfway down.
Yep.
And popped out. And he hit other shots. He played well. He still had a good game. Early in the game, he kept him in it because you're right. Michigan was shredding Tennessee early. They're very tough to guard. But down the stretch, I mean, if you look at the shots those teams had, I mean, even Dickinson, he had to hit like a fadeaway that was really tough. Like they started to really do a good job of mucking it up around him, not letting him go in there and either score or set someone up for a layup. And basically it was like Eli Brooks off the ball screen, can you hit this mid-range jumper? And he did. And then he got hot and he hits that hook. But, I mean, Tennessee's shots down the stretch with the lead and then down to the end were better than Michigan's shots. And as a coach, that's how you judge things. It's who got better shots. Yep. That's how you have to, because you can't put the ball in for your players. So I think you're right. It is as simple as they missed really good shots. I would not complain at all about any of the shots they got. I mean, you can always say, hey, well, go to the rim. Well, okay. But they're not helping off those people over there. They're in here, not letting us go there. But now they're leaving us wide open out here. You have to do that. You make the right basketball play. Didn't hit the shots. How much does that have to do with all of this stuff, the pressure? I just think there's extra pressure that these guys put on themselves because they love Rick Barnes so much. I mean, that hit me the other night, that game, and then going back to Tampa when the whole celebration was like, it was all about, like, Rick, we did this for you, Rick. And it's like, man, it's just a lot. I mean, he's not asking him to do that, but that's human nature when you know that the entire college basketball, I looked at Twitter too, it was like Stuart Mandel for the, you know, our college football guy, like, here's Rick Barnes' record in March. Like, everyone immediately tweets it. It's always comes up.
So do you feel any differently about the SEC now? Tennessee's out, Kentucky's out, Auburn's out, Alabama's out, Arkansas is the one team left that's standing. You feel any differently about the SEC now based on the way the tournament has gone through the first weekend?
I think that stuff gets super overrated because it's still individual team matchups. But it also, it's part of the deal. You know, if you're league performs the SEC tournament, then you were great. You were underrated. You were overrated. If you don't, it's pretty disappointing, man. It's pretty disappointing. You know, like I said, I thought Auburn was a mess. Kentucky, I watched St. Peter's win two games, and I'm still like, I
go
swear,
Peacocks.
I'm beating these dudes. I'm getting five people and beating these dudes at the Y. I swear, I don't know, but they're incredible. I don't know.
Yeah.
Doug, I mean, you can't not love that hair and mustache combo.
Oh, yeah. Fantastic. Yes. Fantastic mustache for Doug. But, yeah, it's pretty disappointing. Auburn, you know, and at least on the Tennessee fan front, by the way, don't have to hear this week about the Bruce Pearl stuff. You know, like,
that
at least
true.
That can die and just. But that's a huge disappointment. They're loaded. It's a big disappointment. Does it mean the SEC stunk this year? No, I think it was good. I mean, I saw Kentucky go into Kansas and destroy them on the road. You know, that game really happened. But the Big Ten and SEC both, very disappointing this tournament.
Yep, no question about it. We'll continue to take your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. A big move made over the weekend for the Tennessee Titans. We'll get into that coming up next. Let me tell you about my friends at the Nashville Predators. Season tickets for the Preds 2022-23 season are on sale now. Full half and quarter season plans are available. You can join the Loyal Legion today and receive the best seat locations, priority access to 2022 Stanley Cup playoff tickets as well. Another big win for the Predators over the weekend.
They're looking pretty good to make the playoffs right now. And as a season ticket citizen, your tickets for round one of the 2022 Stanley Cup playoffs will be up to 20% lower than your regular season price. Tickets for round two of the Cup playoffs will be the same as your regular season price. So you're going to want to take advantage of that. Season ticket citizens receive season-long benefits, including concession discounts, Nashville locker room discounts, pre-sales to shows at Bridgestone Arena, and savings on Preds Foundation events as well. You can learn more at NashvillePredators.com/season tickets. Once again, that's NashvillePredators.com/season tickets.
Play action from Goff. Goff, deep ball. Robert Woods, he's got it! Robert Woods, he is gone! Touchdown Rams, 94 yards!
Big move for the Titans over the weekend. Robert Woods, your newest member of the Tennessee Titans. The Titans trade a 2023 sixth-round pick to the Los Angeles Rams, and Robert Woods comes back the other way, adding to that receiving core for the Tennessee Titans. We wondered, with Julio Jones gone, what would the receiving core look like? Would they address it in the draft, which I think they probably still should at some point in the draft? Would they get a veteran receiver out there via free agency? They did not via free agency, but they did via trade. Robert Woods coming back to the Tennessee Titans. So now the 1-2 combo of A.J. Brown and Robert Woods, all of a sudden that receiving core is looking a little bit better than it did last Friday when we got off the air. Joe Rexroad, what do you think of this move for the Titans? What do you think of Robert Woods coming to this offense here with A.J. Brown, Ryan Tannehill, Derrick Henry, and company?
Well, things look a lot different today than they did a few days ago. Austin Hooper, Ryan Woods, so they're here they are. They are trying to make things better around Ryan Tannehill, and they have. I mean, Hooper is interesting. I think he could be really good. I think there's obviously a lot of question. He didn't have a good year last year. A lot of Cleveland Browns didn't, but Robert Woods was having a great year before the ACL. So of course he's another injured player.
Check that box.
That is being acquired by John Robinson. But again, part of that is that you can get value. You can get some good value, and they needed to get some good value. I mean, sixth-round pick in 23 for Robert Woods.
It's not bad.
That's not bad at all. Obviously, there are questions about – so he got hurt in November. I'm trying to think. Did he get hurt right after the Titans game?
I believe so.
Yeah, the next week?
Yeah. And, of course, OBJ comes in.
Right, and, that's great, but he's good. I mean, he's 29 years old. He's played his. I mean, essentially, he would have had a third out of 4 years with 1,000 yards, probably, and he was so close to 1,020. So almost 4 straight years of 1,000 yards after kind of being sort of like a just possession guy in Buffalo. One thing that stands out, somebody tweeted this out, and I forget who, again, but good job, person who I forgot, tweeted out the full Vrabel quote before they played the Rams.
I think it's TD.
Was it
Luke
TD?
Luke Warshaw, too.
Good job, TD. And Luke. All right, there you go, TD and
Combo.
Luke. Great job. But, now Vrabel, the one thing that Vrabel will say during a game week is, he will absolutely, he'll praise the other team's players.
Oh, yeah.
Like all day long, but he had a pretty long quote about Robert Woods as a blocker. Loves
Let's
Robert
get back
Woods
in
as
it.
A blocker.
Come on,
but hey, it matters in this offense. Blocking matters. Blocking matters at all positions.
Imagine with
football
Robert
is
Woods,
blocking and tackling.
Robert Woods and Nick Westbrook Akina out there. Derrick Henry's going to run for 2,500 yards.
I mean, is anybody going to tackle him? I don't know. How many safeties do you have? You better have about 5 safeties out there.
Who needs Roger Saffold? You got those two out there blocking.
That's a good point. You just put Robert Woods in motion, and basically he's your left guard,
Yeah.
But seriously, I mean, it's totally his kind of player, which is really interesting, too, when you think about this in terms of now here's another, former Rams receiver that they acquired. The last one, apparently, there was no fit whatsoever, with Josh Reynolds. And it just did not go well. Again, his injury is part of why it didn't go well. But it wasn't a fit. And Robert Woods is exactly – I mean, obviously, Vrabel also praised Cooper Kupp, by the way. And essentially, if you go by the analytics, there was some ranking, and again, I forgot what it was because I was covering hoops this weekend, and I'm seeing things very fast, and then I'm focused on, the Vols miss another shot. Some ratings had Kupp and Woods as like the top two blocking receivers in the league.
Yeah.
Did you see that? What was that?
I don't remember exactly where that came from, but I did see it.
It's pretty good, man.
Yeah.
So, no, I mean, but seriously, he fits. He fits what they want to do. Yes, he's hurt. So what does that mean about next season? Is it going to be a while before, you know, so Lawan was ready. I mean, I think Robert Woods will probably be ready to play at the beginning of the season, but is he gonna take a little time, you know, to come back? I don't know. We'll see. I mean, you feel better about smaller guys getting through that stuff than you do, you know, the big fellas.
Yeah, for sure. And as you said, before he got hurt last year, 45 catches, 556 yards in 9 games, 4 touchdowns. He's a good player. He's 29 years old right now, so, you know, obviously a little bit younger than Julio Jones. You know, if he's healthy and ready to go, I mean, you feel pretty good about this 1-2 punch with A.J. Brown and Robert Woods. I guess the question now is, with Robert Woods in the fold, you know, this time last week we were talking about it's probably going to be a wide receiver with your first-round pick. It still could be, and you could still, you know, kind of approach it that way, and maybe it's a slot guy. I don't know. I mean, you could do a lot of different things with your first-round pick. I do think this now, with this hole being filled, leaves the door open a little bit to maybe go somewhere else with your first-round pick if you want to. Maybe go with just what your board says, Joe Rexroad.
Yeah. No, you could. To me, if you now you run into a Jameson Williams or a Chris Olave or something like that,
yep,
I think it'd still be really hard to pass up on that. But you're less desperate to get a receiver. I still think you need to get one, but it's not like, who's your number two receiver that you're drafting tonight? You know, I mean, Robert Woods is a really nice number two receiver. You know, Robert Woods, right now, his profile, what we know of him, is he as exciting as what we thought Julio Jones was supposed to be, you know, when they acquired him? No. But do I like Robert Woods' chances next year of having a better year than Julio Jones had this last year? I do.
Yeah. Just hope he stays healthy.
Yeah. But another thing about Robert Woods is, you know, you talk about someone that people rave about in terms of, like, his personality and stuff. I mean, rave about the guy. So, and look, that's a good thing. You want more of that on your team.
He wore number 2 last year for the Rams. You think he's coming in and stealing Julio's number right off the bat? Just say, move aside, Julio Jones, I'll take number 2.
That hasn't been retired?
I don't think so, not yet. Could be in the plans.
That's the thing. You know, it hasn't been officially retired yet, but maybe like the committee may be ruling on whether to.
Well, you know he's not going to be 17. That's what he was with the Rams for like 5 years, and then he changed it to 2 last year.
There's some people that would be okay with him being 17.
I think there probably are.
There's your new 17, folks. And the current 17, find another spot.
That's right. We'll continue to take your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Big moves for the Tennessee Titans. They get their wide receiver number 2 in Robert Woods. They get their tight end as well. We'll get into the Austin Hooper move by John Robinson, the Titans. What do we feel about that move? How much could that help at the tight end position? That's coming up next. This is Robbie and Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Third down and 3. Ryan, pressure, in trouble, lets it fly deep, wide open is Austin Hooper. Now it's a foot race. Stiff arm against Dex. Hooper is going to go. Touchdown. 88 yards.
Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Little Guys Movers. Here's your chance to be your own boss. Join their team of 30-plus years of profits and good times. Visit littleguysfranchise.com. It's a disaster in here.
If you need to talk to me, Michelle, just text me, okay?
It's an absolute travesty in here with the headphone situation. By the way, we are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Talking Titans, we've discussed the big move to get Robert Woods in here. Titans acquire Robert Woods from the L.A. Rams in exchange for a 2023 sixth-round pick. So Robert Woods coming in. And it was interesting, like, based on the reporting that's been done since then of obviously that Robert Woods meant a great deal to the Rams, and they wanted to do right by him, I think is the way that they put it. So they found, in their minds, what was the right destination. That's here with Tennessee, and that's a pretty cheap price to get Robert Woods in if you're John Robinson. I think well worth a six-round pick in 2023. Titans also found their tight end over the weekend. Austin Hooper signed by the Tennessee Titans, a one-year deal. Austin Hooper, of course, you know, I watched him play in Atlanta, and I was like, man, this guy's pretty good. And he went to Cleveland, and I thought, wow, you've got Austin Hooper, you've got David Njoku. It's a pretty nice 1-2 punch at tight end for the Browns. It did not work out as well in Cleveland as I thought it would with Austin Hooper, but a one-year, $6 million deal for Austin Hooper here with the Titans. What do you think about that move at tight end and Hooper at age 27 coming in here with Tennessee?
Well, you know, I feel like the Woods acquisition is someone who I think there's a fair amount of certainty with what you're going to get with him. He's not going to be a superstar. He's going to be a good number two receiver. Again, you don't know how an ACL is going to rehab and all that stuff. But for the most part, these days, those things are successful. And so I think you feel like Robert Woods is going to be a really nice addition. Hooper, I think, is actually, I think, a more important person, you could argue, next year for this team, and a little bit less certainty with him. Like you said, I mean, he had those two really good years, his third and fourth years in Atlanta, 71 catches for 660, four touchdowns, and then 75 catches for 787 and six touchdowns in 2019. Kind of a rising star, young player, third and fourth years in the league. You know, Cleveland, the production went down. He also missed some time in 20. You know, the last couple of years, he's had a total of 84 catches for 700. So basically, the last 2 years combined are what he did in 19 in Atlanta,
yep.
You know, and a total of seven touchdowns in those years. So, but how much does that have to do with, I mean, last year with the Browns is also hard, too, because of Baker's situation and all the stuff that went on there. They just had a brutal year, and Njoku's just a super talent, you know, who also at times kind of been underwhelming. I think it's, you're talking about a young, clearly talented guy who's producing this league, and it's one of those things where, so you think back to, I mean, I hate to make any comparison to like Vic Beasley, but like Vic Beasley is the classic example of, here's someone who has produced in this league, still young, still should be good. What's the word on the street on Vic Beasley? And the word on the street when they got him was, I mean, people still don't make enough
money. Don't really know if he want to play football.
Right. I mean, everybody, like, that still is like the way under discussed bad move of the last few years versus, like, to me, like Clowney, which everybody knew, like, the risk and everything, but you know that there was reward. With Vic Beasley, there was a lot of, I don't know, man. I don't know if you want to go there, and it was obviously a bad idea. So what's the deal with Hooper? I just bring that up to say the answer is so much about, like, what, where he is in terms of how motivated he is to come in here and grab this opportunity. He is this team's flat out number one tight end, you know, and should be a really important productive player if he wants to be that. So if you feel good about that, if you're the Titans, and where he is in that way, then I think this could be a really nice pickup. They need more still, but this is a really good start, and just they just badly needed someone who is a number one tight end in this league, quality player to be that number one tight end, and he is that.
He is, and we'll see if the production can translate on the field. I mean, as you pointed out, 38 catches last year for Hooper, 345 yards, three touchdowns. Those are not numbers that are going to blow you away. I think obviously the expectation would be higher than that if you're the Titans heading into what would be, you know, a season where you do have Robert Woods now. You've got A.J. Brown. You've got Derrick Henry. There's a lot of weapons on this Titans offense. Can Hooper be a guy that you can go to over the middle of the field? I mean, we've talked about that so much. You know, they just didn't really have that guy last year. You know, Firkser came on a little bit towards the end of the year, but the tight end position is so important. And Austin Hooper at age 27, you know, if it works out, maybe he's your tight end for the next few years as well. So, you know, I think it's worth the risk. I mean, $6 million, that's the price range where I thought they could probably fit in there to find a tight end. I mean, obviously guys like Zach Ertz, I mean, you're going to price yourself out of that. But Hooper, you know, he's been a productive player in this league. We'll see if he can get back to that. I guess if you're a Titans fan, how much differently do you feel about the offense today, knowing that there's still, you know, obviously something to figure out on the offensive line? I still think they're going to draft a wide receiver at some point in the draft, be that in the first round or later in the draft. But you do have A.J. Brown, Robert Woods, Derrick Henry, Austin Hooper now. Sounds a whole lot better to me than it did this time last week. No question about it.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. And you need to get another – well, I could see the tight end room. It's Swaim Hooper now. You know, I could see it being rounded out with a draft pick, which I think that they absolutely should explore. I mean, I think that still should be a priority in there somewhere. Someone that you really feel like you can bring along. And then what's the situation with Briley Moore? You know, how is his rehab? I mean, he tore his ACL, in August. Is he someone that they feel like, you know, can really come along and be there? Does a Firkser still end up finding his way back here? I mean, I'm really interested to see what happens with Anthony Firkser out there. How many teams were interested in him? You know, big opportunity last year and did not go well. Did not go nearly like I think he planned or like the Titans planned. I could still see them ending up coming back around to him if someone else out there doesn't give him more money than they want to give him. So that could still end up being the tight end room. But I feel like a good, you know, rookie developmental player is important still.
Yep, I think so as well. When we got off the air on Friday, we were talking about Deshaun Watson and how the team, it had been narrowed down to two teams, the Falcons and the Saints. And all of a sudden, it wasn't narrowed down to two teams. He goes back to the Cleveland Browns on a fully guaranteed contract, $230 million for Deshaun Watson. So he goes from ruling the Browns out, apparently, to them coming back, getting into the fold, and all of a sudden he's got a fully guaranteed five-year, $230 million contract to be the quarterback of the Cleveland Browns, which is quite interesting that he gets a fully guaranteed contract given his situation that's going on right now. That's going to put Baker Mayfield on the trading block as well. Your reaction to Deshaun Watson being the next quarterback of the Cleveland Browns and the contract that goes along with it?
Well, yeah, let's just – it's another great example of, like, what matters and what doesn't matter. Okay? Not that anyone should be surprised whatsoever, but it's still like, oh, my goodness. You are putting everything into – this guy who, regardless of what you know, I know that the Browns put out a nice statement that said they did extensive investigation into the Watson situation. I'd love to know the specifics of their extensive investigation.
I would too.
You know, look, if there aren't criminal charges coming, then I can't. I mean, you know, if you're good enough and you're a player like that, there's going to be a huge market. I understand that. It is a lot, though, there's got to be some questions, right, about what's up with this dude. I mean, is that not fair? Even if there's not criminal charges, would there not still be a little bit of, what's up with this guy?
I mean, I'd hope so.
Yeah, I would hope so, too. But ultimately, you know, the Browns basically said, this is what has to happen. We have to do this outrageous contract to get him, and it worked, and I don't know. I'd love to know, like, is Cleveland in full celebration mode over this? Are Browns fans just, you know, parading through the streets? Or is there a little bit of like,
I don't know. That's a good question. I can tell you this. If he's on the field and there's no suspension coming, which, by the way, there still could be.
Sure. Like,
just because there have been no criminal charges filed, that does not change what the NFL could do.
It's probably going to be a six-game suspension, right? Yeah. That's what people seem to think. And that probably makes sense.
Yeah. So it could be a six-game suspension, four-game, through the appeal process. I don't know what's going to end up happening here with Deshaun Watson. But I can tell you this, the first time he throws a touchdown pass for Cleveland, yeah, they'll be fine.
Yeah. Sure. I mean, look, ultimately, if you're a Browns fan, yes, you would rather have Deshaun Watson as your quarterback than Baker Mayfield. If Deshaun Watson is going to quarterback in the NFL, like, okay, if that's going to happen for sure, would you not rather him be quarterbacking your team than some other team, especially some other AFC team? Yeah. It's just like that contract is just – that's pure belief, man. That is pure belief. And
I mean, it's the biggest contract in NFL history.
Yeah. So, which again, like, and so there's been a lot written in response of kind of just like, oh, so gross, which I understand. I do. But also, let's not be surprised by this.
No.
Let's not be surprised at all by this.
Well, no, we knew when there were no criminal charges that were going to be filed, we knew. Like, the market was open at that point for Deshaun Watson. I'm just interested to how it apparently was down to Falcons and Saints, and then all of a sudden the Browns got back in. Was it as simple as, hey, we'll fully guarantee your contract, and that's how they got Beckett in there? Like, it sounds like to me that's what it was.
Sounds to me like basically, yeah, just like we're going to win the bidding war and blow you guys. I mean, so we talked about Watson was like, it was like Auburn, Alabama over recruit, and, you know, Ohio State rolled in and just said, nope. Here we go.
Yep.
How about three cars and, you know, a big stack of cash in a McDonald's bag?
So you thought maybe that you were getting, like, at least one of these top-tier quarterbacks out of the AFC?
They're all in the AFC.
They didn't.
Like, they may need to go back to the old AFL-NFL thing, but you flip it around. So, the current AFC is like the old NFL.
Yeah.
You know? It's sort of like then they'll play a nice little exhibition called the Super Bowl, yes, against the other league, and then, okay, that's fine. I mean, it's incredible.
It's got Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, and Matthew Stafford hanging out on the NFC island. Just, all right, you guys have fun over there.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. And again, imagine if Brady didn't decide to come back.
I know.
It's pretty amazing. But the Browns will, again, be fascinating. And now, where the heck is Baker going? Who are the Colts getting?
It's a great question. I mean, can they get – what's the price for Baker Mayfield? That's what I want to know. Is like, what is the price ultimately going to end up being? By the way, Jimmy G's still out there as well. Like, what's the price for Baker Mayfield at this point? Knowing at this point, like, if you're the Browns, you don't really have any leverage in trade talks either. Like, you've got to get rid of him.
Right, and plus, you know that, like, the Colts, for example, have other options. They have Jimmy G. They have maybe Matt Ryan. So, I don't know. I think the Colts, because of that, in particular with them, I mean, with both of those teams, especially, not the Falcons so much, but especially with the Niners and the Browns, I mean, you kind of have the leverage with that. So, I think they could get them, one of them, maybe both of them. Trade for both of them.
Maybe so.
Relatively cheaply.
I've got some tickets to give away to see Shinedown coming up at Bridgestone Arena on May the 4th. Be caller number 5, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Caller number 5 will win a pair of tickets to see Shinedown coming up at Bridgestone Arena on May the 4th. When we come back, it is NHL trade deadline day here today. The Preds have already made one move. How active could they be today? And could that involve number 9? We'll get into that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.